Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
I'm going to start then. Give me your best gash stories. I'm Beth Morrie, and this is One Torn Every Minute, the podcast where we talk about giving birth. Today, I'm joined by the wonderful author and journalist, Marianne Levy. Welcome, Marianne, to my virtual womb with a view. Firstly, can we gently tug at your umbilical cord by summarising how many times you have given birth?
I have given birth twice.
Twice, right. Mm-hmm. That's the average, isn't it? I am going to make you do something rather uncomfortable now, and that is choose your favourite child. Because what we do in this podcast is we tend to focus on one birth. And by favourite, let's be clear, I don't really mean favourite. I mean sort of the most grim, the most interesting, the most juicy of your births. Which one was it? Was it first or second?
I will go for my first birth. So my first birth was the usual manner. My second birth was an elective section. So I will go for my first birth.
Well, I also want to dip into the second birth because I love variety in our stories. So the fact that you've experienced both types is really interesting. So we're going for your first birth. And what year is this?
Oh, God. 20, I know, immediately don't know how old my children are. 2014, that would have been. May 2014 with my daughter.
And can we set the scene? How was the pregnancy?
I'm not good at being pregnant. You know, I've heard about people who have the glow. I never experienced the glow. I'm very short. I had very bad water retention.
Sounds like such a non sequitur. I didn't experience the glow. I'm very short.
Well, I mean, I just blew up. I look like a kind of a weeble, or what are those? A space hopper. I look like a space hopper, but with sort of fuzzy blonde hair on the top. So I blew up. I put on, I don't know, just loads of weight. I sat around pretty. I had no faith that I would be particularly good at giving birth. I didn't think I'd especially be bad at it, but I certainly didn't have any particular optimism about it. And I didn't particularly do pregnancy well, so that there wasn't any sense of, well, bring it on, childbirth is going to be my thing, because I was pretty certain it wouldn't be.
So you're already feeling like not a natural mother.
Yeah. So to the point where we spent pretty much every spare penny we had on getting a private midwife, on the basis that that would be some kind of way of making it better, maybe. And, you know, we don't have loads of money. I buy all my clothes in charity shops. And so I was like, well, come on, please, we've got, you know, let's max out and let's get this private midwife, partly because I thought she'd have gas and air and maybe I could get a bit of pain relief earlier on in the process.
Oh, I see, you know, otherwise, like private gas and air in your house.
Yeah, because they do home births, and I was never going to have a home birth. I was always very clear, I mean, that I was going to go into hospital, but I thought, oh, you know, maybe I'll get the gas and air in a bit earlier.
I'd never thought about that. That's a really good idea, the sort of private administering of drugs in the home.
Yeah, I didn't get any.
No, but it's a good plan. I mean,
yeah, it was a great plan that didn't come off.
You know, we've really established in the course of the interviews that I've had with women that the plan never goes to plan. But it's good to have one. And that is quite an unusual and canny plan, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, the other thing I wrote on my birth plan is I wrote yes to epidural, no forceps. And so those were my kind of three.
Yeah, I think I wrote. I think my main thing was just no to episiotomy. if I'm going to have an episiotomy, then we're going to pack up and go home, and I'm not going to have a baby. That's my
Ever.
Plan. Yeah. That was
How did
my
that go back?
Well, come to that, won't we? So you've blown up like a balloon.
Yeah.
Did you feel sick or, you know, tired or what?
Oh, everything. And my back was terrible. And the thing that set it all off, all sorts of things could have set it off, but I had a deep tissue massage. I think it was the Monday of the week that I gave birth. And we are talking a whole week here. But I had a deep tissue massage for my back because I was really in pain. And don't have a deep tissue massage the day before your due date. It's a really terrible idea, because I then had a very painful back all the way through labour, because labour hurts your back. And you know how painful you are to touch after a deep tissue.
Yeah,
what you really don't
really
want
going.
Is someone just... And so every time my husband was kind of pushing on my back, I was going, don't touch that, it's really sore. So,
but how did you find someone to give you deep tissue massage? Because I had a bad back in when I was pregnant, and my experience was that wherever I went for massages, these kind of the pregnancy massages that you can get, were the most namby-pamby, absolute shite laying on of hands that I've ever experienced, because nobody really dares touch you properly because they're so worried.
I was so pregnant, and I mean, it was the day before my due date, I think, or 2 days before my due date. I suspect the feeling was, so long as he didn't touch the front of me,
that it was cooked enough.
It was cooked. I had the massage and then went back upstairs and felt a bit weird, and then possibly too much information, I lost my plug.
Ooh, I love the detaching of the mucus plug.
I was in the bathroom, just went, oh, fuck. Like, here we go.
Heralding the baby. Fuck.
Absolutely. I don't know what level of denial I was in.
It's hard to be in denial when you look like a space hopper.
And yet.
Had you done anything, you know, new age, like hypnobirthing or anything to sort of ease you in?
Nah, I don't not believe in it, but I'm not that sort of person, and therefore I felt like I wouldn't be able to give myself enough to it for it to work on me.
Yeah.
So I'm
that person too, and I paid for it. And
I remember seeing notes all around your house, positive affirmations, and my internal reaction to them told me that I could never put those notes all around my house. So we just didn't. I did NCT and things like that, and we had a birthing ball that I used for, you know, maybe 9 seconds, but nothing otherwise.
It's quite boring, isn't it? Because I think. I was talking to someone about perineal massage that you can do in the last few weeks.
We did do that.
When you say we, because I did it myself, and it's hard to do.
I couldn't get to it.
It's a reach around.
Being really short, I couldn't get, my torso just wasn't long enough. I couldn't get around it. So we bought, I think my husband had been dispatched to get the almond oil, and there was a night when he went, shall we do this? And I kind of went,
did he do it for you?
Well, very briefly, and then we both agreed that he had to stop and we would never do this again.
For some reason, I can find myself going red at the thought.
I'm going pretty red at the thought of it. It was,
it actually completely makes sense, because it's hard to do because of the reach around. But it just didn't occur to me that you could ask your partner to do it for you. I'm obviously so prudish, but it is. I mean, it's a difficult thing to do because you don't know how much you're supposed to do it. You don't know what the sensation is supposed to feel like.
I think again, I just thought, well, I don't know how stretchy we're supposed to be making things, but I suspect it's not going to be stretchy enough. I mean, we did that for maybe a minute and a half before I called a halt to it and put the almond oil back in a cupboard.
Oh, well, I'm sure that minute and a half made all the difference. Back to your mucus plug, which has come out in the bath, is that right?
I know I was on the loo. I went to the loo after the massage, and had a wipe, and a tremendous amount of business was there.
Do you think the massage actually brought it on?
Yeah, I do. I think, I mean, I don't know, but it was pretty intense. And then that happened immediately. I mean, it could have happened during it. So, and I, you know, also I was, you know, it was a day or two before my due date. I mean, it was, in a sense, I suppose I was quite lucky. I didn't go massively overdue, as a lot of people do on their first. Yeah,
your timing is good.
I say, in a sense, I was quite lucky. The whole thing was dreadful. But not very lucky. But.
So there's the business. And what did you do next?
Told my husband after the dude had gone, because I think we split the massage between me and my husband. So I got the first half hour, my husband got the second half hour, then was feeling all relaxed. And then I kind of waddled downstairs and went, I've lost my plug. And then not much happened. So had a sort of odd occasional contraction. I think I sent my husband into work the next day.
Which and I then, feel is quite hardcore.
Well, no, I mean, it was just sort of cramps at that point.
Yeah.
And then I think, and then I had, you know, the first thing that I thought, oh, yes, no, that probably is a contraction. And then I finished work on the manuscript that I was doing. I sat down at my computer and finished off my book and sent it to my agent, and you know,
I've heard someone doing their tax return while they're in the early stages of labour. So this is no surprise to me. It's a nice distraction.
Well, you know, I felt like I'd achieved something.
Yeah, get it done.
Yeah. And my husband came home, and I think he'd said, you know, it's starting now. So sort of started his pat leave. And then the contractions slowly ramped up. And then by about Wednesday night, this was. So I think all this sort of, by about Wednesday lunchtime, I was having, you know, sort of reasonable contractions. By Wednesday evening, you know, proper kind of shouty contractions. And we phoned this private midwife, and she heard me going rah on the phone, and said, okay, I'll come. Turned up, and I said, oh, where's the gas and air? And she said, oh, no, it's a bit early for that. No, we're going to keep that for later. Yeah, that was a bad moment.
Birth is just one bringing down to earth, isn't it? Because there's that early bit where you get contractions and you go, you know what, this isn't too bad. I mean, I'm not really sure what all the fuss is about. I think I'm probably going to be able to take this. And then from then on, it's just downhill.
Well, mine was peaks and troughs, actually. So at this point, so the midwife comes over, and this is, you know, everything is pretty grim, and I'm not enjoying it much. But she checks me, and she says, oh, you're 1 centimetre dilated.
Which in itself is a bit of a disappointment, isn't it?
But she said, well, you know, you're getting strong contractions. You know, you're clearly in a reasonable amount of pain. Let's hook you up to the... So I think we hooked me up to the TENS machine.
Well, how did you find that?
Well, I used it for probably nearly a day, and then eventually it fell off during a contraction, and I realized it had been making the contractions marginally worse.
Right. It's not great advert for TENS.
Well, I'm the only person that I know that that's happened to, so I clearly something slightly, or we put it on wrong or something, I don't know. But and then you know, it was a relief not to have that strapped to me anymore. But so she stayed for about 6 hours, 10 hours. She stayed overnight while I kind of bashed around the house, lowing and making noises. But, you know, was sort of excited, at least, thinking, well, you know, in the morning I'm probably going to have a baby. This is, you know, here we go. And she would look at me and go, oh, you're doing really well. And I'd think, I don't think I'm doing that well, but okay.
They're supposed to say that, though, aren't they? When you say look at you, do you mean she was checking dilation?
Well, no, because she couldn't check dilation too often.
Because of the infection.
So she could only do it every few hours. But, you know, I sort of lowed and mooed and bent over and rubbed my back, and I said, ow. And then, so, you know, many hours later, she checked me again in the morning. This is Thursday morning. And I was 1 centimetre dilated.
Yeah, that's really demoralising.
That was a real low. And then she went home. And Thursday was a very shit day.
Right.
I mean, I cannot emphasise enough how awful Thursday was, as I just cried and bent over and howled, and Rob tried to get me to eat and I couldn't really. And there was a bit where somebody suggested putting me in the bath and I got into the bath and then had a contraction and just panicked and sort of sloshed about and couldn't get out.
Because a bath is really not the same as a birthing pool.
No, because I think you need that sort of support bars on the side and you need a bit more depth so that
space.
You can actually move. And I was just sort of trapped in the bath like a massive fish in a saucepan. Oh, it was awful. And then many hours later, the midwife comes back again and checks me. And I'm 1 centimetre dilated.
Fuck!
Yeah, this is now Thursday evening. And I...
And surely at that point we go, right.
Well, yeah, we did. And so I found out later that it was, a lot later, that it was a back-to-back labour, which...
Oh, yes, they're awful.
Yeah, so she was just, she just wasn't, my daughter wasn't moving down, wasn't pressing on my cervix in the right way. And, it was my first birth. Anyway, so I was just absolutely stuck with these agonising contractions that weren't leading to anything. And at this point I said, I'm not doing well. And she went, oh, no, you are. And I thought, God, what do I have to do in order to convince her that I am not doing well? Is it lie
You've
down in front
an
of
a
the
plus.
Bus? Yeah, I mean, I am not doing well. I am doing as badly as it is possible for a person to do. So I just, at that point, went, right, well, I'm out now. I wish to be dead. Can someone please come and shoot me? God, it was awful. But, and things like, yeah, I remember things like, the contractions, the best bit of being in labour was the bit just before a contraction would peak, because I knew then there was the maximum amount of time before the next contraction started.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
It's just hideous. And I was sleeping between the contractions because I was so exhausted. But what that meant was that it felt like I was pretty much experiencing a continuous contraction because I would lose control. Oh, it's awful. So Thursday night... I say, right, I wish to die, please. Can someone shoot me? Because this is awful. And the midwife rings UCH and gets me admitted. That is the thing that she actually can do. Because
now that is worth the money.
Yeah. And it was a lot of money, but it got me in. I didn't go and
I
get turned
I cannot tell
away.
You how much of a relief it is to do that, to not turn up and have somebody shake their head at you and go away again and stand on the street for all we care. Just to have that instant entry. It's
well,
like
it was partly inspired
club.
By, yeah, but it was partly inspired by your story of breaking down in a lift or whatever it was, and being found by a midwife who said, "I think you need to go back." And I thought that cannot happen to me. I will not let that happen to me. And
I think we can agree that you should carry on shopping in charity shops because your money was well spent.
It really was. It really was. In that instance, so they got me in, and they gave me pethidine.
Mm-hmm.
And
heroin.
And I didn't get high or anything, but
no,
it
you
did
can't.
Mean
I don't
sleep.
Think.
And that was really good.
I'm glad that worked for you because I had pethidine and I don't really remember it making any kind of a difference. So it's good to hear that it actually has an effect.
No, it did have an effect because I remember I was sitting on the ward that you go into, the antenatal ward, and somebody next door in the cubicle next door was watching Made in Chelsea very loudly. And I didn't care. So therefore, the pethidine clearly was working because I just went, yes. And I went to sleep. And the private midwife now can't really do anything more.
Yeah, it's insurance, isn't it? They're not allowed to touch
so she's...
You.
She's sort of just watching from now on. And so she goes and I go to sleep and eventually the pethidine wears off. Friday morning, I think.
Right. So you went into, you sort of started on Monday.
Well, I had I lost my plug Monday night, sort of occasional crampy contractions all through Tuesday. Proper contractions from Wednesday lunchtime, sort of proper painful ones. It's now Friday, first thing in the morning.
Hell of a working week.
Oh, well, it took a huge chunk of my husband's paternity leave before we had the baby.
Oh,
it was, yeah.
I mean, that's just a killer, isn't it?
Well, I think, it doesn't occur to anybody in authority that... You might need longer than 2 weeks.
But that's what
you're
going to
have a baby
told,
for a week.
There's a big thing about, childbirth's awful, isn't it? It's awful. But, it's a day. It's a day. here we
well,
are.
Yours and... was, though. Yours was very quick, wasn't it?
It wasn't too bad. It was about, I don't know, 15 to 18 hours, which I count as pretty speedy, really. But yeah, I think I'd be, yeah, I'd definitely be losing the will to live by day five. So we're on Friday. You've woken up Friday. From the pethidine.
I've not really eaten or drunk anything now for ages as well. I've woken up from the pethidine and someone comes and checks me and I'm 1 centimetre.
Shit!
Yes, it was so awful. And at this point, I really am like, I don't know what to do now. And they admit me to the labour ward and they break my waters and there's thick meconium in my waters.
Ugh.
My husband's summoned back to the hospital and I am in agony because the pethidine has worn off, contractions very strong now, or I'm feeling them more strongly because I've not got my waters, and I'm bouncing around the room like a ping pong ball.
Presumably you're not dilated enough for an epidural.
Well, so later I had the NHS very kindly gave me some therapy to deal with all of this. And yeah. My nice psychologist went, why did they not give you an epidural before they broke your waters? And I had no decent answer to that.
I didn't know you could do that.
Well, she seemed to think that you could. But anyway, they didn't offer it. I didn't take it. And I'm naked as well. It's very hot. And so I've got all my clothes off. I'm running around screaming. Rob, I think we get some food turns up. Somebody has ordered me some food. And I remember Rob holding this plate of chicken, trying to get me to eat it. And I'm having a contraction going, get it out!
I can't imagine anything worse.
Well, and because Rob's like, well, where do I put the chicken? I don't, what, just in the, where do you go, get it out!
Fuck off with your chicken!
Yes, then Rob goes and puts the chicken in the corridor. and he's not a rule breaker, so he doesn't want to leave the chicken in anyone's way.
I'm really feeling the sympathy for Rob here. I mean, fuck you. It was a real faux pas for him to put the chicken in the corridor. He's probably mortified still.
Oh, God, and there's something about the smell of it. Everyone's going, well, you've got to it. And then somebody does finally offer me an epidural. I'm like, yes. And the midwife, the hospital midwife, says, well, you've got to put some clothes on because the anaesthetist is not going to want to see you naked.
You kidding me?
Yeah, I'm not. And I also couldn't put any clothes on because I was having such terrible contractions. So she kind of has to wrestle me into
an anaesthetist, some sort of anaesthetist from the 18th century who's offended by the female form?
Yes, he didn't want to see my ankles in labour. I don't know. I mean, I don't know where she got that from, but she was very insistent.
Odd.
And because I was at that point, I think I was on my own for whatever reason. I think everyone else had gone off to do, I think Rob had gone to sleep.
Rob's having therapy for the chicken incident.
Yes, exactly. So this midwife wrestles me into a nighties. And the anaesthetist turns up and gives me an epidural and, oh God, yeah.
Averts his eyes from your naked breasts.
Yes. Obviously he's incredibly turned on, but pushes his erection away long enough to put a needle into my spine and give me the epidural. And it's great. All the pain disappears immediately and I go straight to sleep because I'm knackered. My bowels go, who cares, glory.
I'm Tilly Steele.
And I'm Helen Monk.
And this is Bitchin'.
I'm dyslexic.
Yeah, why do you read the Wikipedia page?
It's good to practice.
A podcast where every week we talk about a different person.
So how old was he when he first popped on the scene?
That's a great
question. If you say he was my age, I'm gonna fucking die.
And we veer wildly off track.
Pop that Prosec.
Available on all your podcast apps.
Can you not say in the advert?
Available on all your podcast platforms. Just search Bitchin' or Great Big Owl.
We'll see you there.
That was all right.
Cool fact. a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm glad the epidural worked so beautifully for you because I'm a bit out on epidurals.
Well, and some people have like light ones, and luckily there was no talk of a light epidural. I mean, I would have gone at this point for a full and general anaesthetic.
Yes.
Actually, I would have gone for death by lethal injection if anyone had offered it to me, but they gave me the epidural, and that was...
They gave you both barrels, and that was...
Yeah, they gave me both barrels. It was brilliant. I shat myself in the bed, didn't care. And I go to sleep, and everyone, and they put me on the drip to get my contractions going more strongly. And I go to sleep, and when I wake up, it's Friday evening, and the midwife checks me again, and I'm 9 centimeters dilated.
What?
And this is a great moment, finally.
So hang on, you achieved that dilation while asleep?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I mean, I think we can take away your own D for how good you are and take you straight back up to an A.
Well, yes, except essentially what we're saying is I'm really good at labour so long as I myself am not actually there.
Yes.
I mean, so long as I'm fully anaesthetised and unconscious, I'm ace at this.
Well, there's a lesson for us all there.
And I remember the midwife had a look at my flu and went, oh, lots of brown hair. And I was surprised. Like, what do you mean? There's a babe? Like, I don't know what I thought I'd been doing for the last... Again, levels of denial, but I was...
It's a lot to come to terms with.
Yeah. But then, so all very optimistic. And then the hospital midwife has another look and says, yeah, you're not going to be able to push that baby out. That the position
Why?
Is bad. Too far up. Stuck. Not going to happen.
What? How did she know from that?
Well, I don't. Maybe she had to use a telescope to see all that hair. I don't know.
Because I mean, yeah. If I'm seeing hair, I'm thinking, well, you know, quite on the way.
Well, what it was, I think again, it must have been to do with the back to backness. I think her head was in a funny position or something. And my daughter's head, not the midwife. Mm. I don't know what position her head was in, but So the midwife poddles off and finds whoever's in charge, the registrar or whoever. And tells the registrar, and the registrar says, without checking me, oh, no, push for an hour. She should push for an hour.
Without checking, wow.
Yeah.
That's now, some box ticking going on there.
Well, and I'm no sports psychologist, but I don't think that put me in the best frame of mind to push the baby out.
No.
I think when an expert has a look and goes, yeah, that's not going to happen.
And then the other person doesn't look and says, it is.
I think I'll go with the person that had a look. Mm. And you know, also I was knackered.
Yeah, you're not in the best frame of mind anyway.
I'd been very pregnant for 9 months, you know.
It's day 348 of labour.
Yeah. And so they turned down the epidural and so I could feel the contractions, but I'm still on my back, which obviously, again, isn't a great position. And I push for an hour and the midwife is quite shouty. I would say the hospital midwife is shouting, push!
Mm.
And nothing happens.
Right.
And now it's Friday, 11 p.m., I would say. And everyone's agreeing that what I need are forceps, which was the one thing I'd put on my birth plan that I didn't want, my two-word birth plan that I didn't want.
So,
but, you know, at this
am
point,
I right in thinking
whatever.
That there was no way you could have an emergency cesarean because she was too far down for that, but just not far down enough to do it, to carry on?
Well, I mean, actually these days, having now had a cesarean, I would probably take the cesarean over forceps because
well,
it did leave me with, you know, fairly terrible birthing injuries. But at the time, I really wanted to avoid a cesarean. And actually, given how long I'd been in labour, I would have, the recovery would have been awful.
Yeah.
So
they went for forceps.
Yeah, they went for forceps, and they were about, so they got everything out, and they gave, you know, I saw the salad tongs, and they got the little light box ready to put the baby in, and blah 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 blah, and everyone got ready, and then they got paged to theatre for a proper emergency.
And yeah, because you're away. Not a proper emergency, so that must have been good for your state of mind.
Well, I didn't mind the first time. I thought, okay, you know, they'll be back in half an hour, and then they'll do me. And an hour passed, and then eventually everyone came back again and started again, and got paged to theatre for an emergency.
Jesus!
And this happened four times.
Bloody hell!
And so I lay there for 5 hours, 9 centimetres dilated, trying to push, because at that, you know, when you've not got the epidural working anymore,
yeah,
you're pushing, you know, absolutely hopelessly. And eventually I worked this, and I said, can I use the epidural? Because I can't bear this. And my midwife, the hospital midwife, went, no, because if you use the epidural, you won't be able to push the baby out. And I thought about that for a bit. I thought, well, I'm not able to push the baby.
So what difference does it make?
And because I had in the end, I ended up using the epidural because they hadn't taken it away from me. So I figured
that was an oversight.
It was awful. Yeah. So my midwife, I think after the third person comes and then goes again, my midwife is clearly now panicking because I remember her going out into the corridor, and I remember hearing people were out in the corridor chatting, and my midwife running out and shouting, Costas, there is thick meconium, come and deliver this baby.
Right.
Which wasn't, that was, you know, when your midwife panics, you think, well, this isn't.
You want them bored of you. That's the best scenario, is them bored, because it means that you're just so mundane and everyday.
Well, the thing is, I suppose I felt pretty mundane and everyday, but I felt like I was waiting to turn into the big emergency where I'd get paged. You know, I'd end up rushing into theatre. And obviously, you know, that's terrifying. And particularly with the meconium, I was worried that the baby would end up with pneumonia or sepsis or something. So, oh, God, it was
But
awful.
I guess with all that paging and leaving you around, it absolutely conclusively demonstrated that baby was not coming on its own.
No. There was no sense that baby was ever going to come out. If you just left us, we'd still be there.
So, they've been paged, and you've been left for 5 hours,
mm-hmm.
and then they're coming back brandishing the forceps. Just to clarify on forcep delivery, do they give you? Because when they do an episiotomy, do they inject you down there to make it nicer, or do they just cut? I can't actually remember. I remember feeling it.
Well, so we've still got one more incident pre-forceps.
Oh, right. Okay. We've got one more.
So at about 2 or 3 a.m., I start to feel like I can't breathe properly. I feel really weird. And yeah. I think, you know, partly because, you know, you're not supposed to lie on your back at all when you're pregnant. After the first 12 weeks.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Well, I've been lying on my back for, you know, what, a day and a half at this point, and I start to feel really strange. And I say to the midwife, I can't breathe properly, I feel weird. And the midwife looks a bit pissed off with me and goes, what, I mean, should I hit the emergency button? And I went, well, yes. I mean, I feel really weird. Don't feel like this should be my decision. But she does, and everyone comes rushing in, and my temperature has spiked, and they give me an oxygen mask, and then I start to feel a bit better. And maybe that's what kind of gets me up the list a bit, I don't know. But then, yeah, and then someone eventually does come in and agree to take this baby out of me. So, and now we're at forceps. Yeah.
So do you get any kind of anaesthetic for forceps that they just go in?
Can't remember.
No, that's my problem. With I think I didn't get any kind of injection for an episiotomy because I remember the sting of it, but I'm not actually sure because it does get a bit hazy. So they go in then?
I think I might have, yeah, and I think certainly I could feel afterwards because I remember feeling when I was stitched up. So there, whatever it was that they gave me, if they did give me anything, it would have been very long acting.
Yeah.
But So at about 4 a.m., a very jolly lady comes in and is all, oh, hello, hello. And I'm like, thank fuck. And in my memory, but I don't think this is what actually happened, she had to brace her foot on the table to yank my daughter out. I don't suppose she actually did, but it was, there was a lot of tugging before this baby emerged from me.
Poor baby as well.
Yeah, and you know, in all the very sort of newborn pictures, she's got this massive mark on her face from the salad tongs, and my husband is crying.
Yeah, is it the chicken still?
So he's, you know, looked at this kind of this scene, and it, you know, it's finished, it's over, and he's weeping at the joy of it and our baby's cry, and I'm just sort of numb. I'm just lying there, and we've got this photo of me holding my daughter. You know, she must be, you know, half an hour old or 20 minutes old, and I'm not even really smiling. I'm just looking mightily pissed off
and shell shocked.
And shell shocked. I'm just battered, and I think I bled after the birth as well, and I could feel her stitching me up. And
so did they. I mean, they must have given you a bit of an anaesthetic for the stitch up.
No, I don't. I think she's, I said, I can feel this. And the jolly lady went, oh, look at your baby.
Oh, because that's an anaesthetic. I didn't realise.
Yeah.
I mean, I must not love my children enough, because looking at them is not enough.
Maybe they should have it in like dental surgeries and stuff when they're doing root canal, just someone wheels a newborn out and everyone can. But I think what I heard from that is shut up.
And let me do this. So, but if she was stitching you up, that sounds like it wasn't the worst tear?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't terrible. I think it was a 2. Does that sound?
Yeah. That's,
I mean, I say it wasn't terrible. It was a massive tear in my vagina. And
It's never good. But I mean, I had a third degree tear from just a normal birth, because I think my vagina must be very delicate. And I'm just thinking that I'm quite impressed that you went through all that with some fucking salad tongs up you and you got away with a second degree tear. I mean,
But it wasn't a tear, I suppose. I think they did cut me, and it was all very controlled because nothing was naturally coming out of there. So God knows they had plenty of time to do it in. So
I mean, what I was trying to say is it could be worse, but to be honest, it really pretty much was as bad as it could be. Mercy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I compare it to my son's birth, so he was an elective section because that what happened could not happen again.
Yes.
And after my son was born, I had a bladder infection, I had an infected section scar, you know, he was really ill, I was really ill, and I would still take that birth over my daughter's birth, because at least people were attentive. I think that the horror of Willow's birth was that there was just no one around for a lot of it. It just didn't feel like anybody was in charge. I certainly wasn't in charge. I just felt very kind of lost. It was hideous, and I don't think I'd ever experienced that thing where, in normal circumstances, when you say I'm in a tremendous amount of pain, people go, oh God, what can we do? And when you're in labour, everyone goes, brilliant, I'm going for a coffee.
I know, it's an essential point about labour. And obviously, you know, if men went through it, we'd probably do it in a completely different way. But it's sort of assumed that women will just get on with it and that this is normal, and actually pain is good. It's a very odd aberration.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's a lot of the time whenever I tried to talk to people about it in the first, you know, few weeks and months after I got back, people would inevitably say, oh, but your daughter is beautiful. Isn't she worth it? And I sort of thought, well, it's a really odd equation that you're drawing, because you would never say to somebody after a car accident, but cars are cool, aren't they? I mean, you know,
you've got a great car out of this, out of the insurance.
Yeah, and isn't it great that you can get to places really quickly? You wouldn't say that to somebody who
it's a really weird
traction.
Example of whataboutery, isn't it? You know, but you've had a healthy baby, so therefore shut up.
Absolutely. And I got that all the time, which is why I think we've never had this conversation, not because I thought you would say it, but by that time I had been so schooled in shutting up.
Yes.
And also because it takes ages. You know, this is a 45-minute story, minimum.
Well, let me tell you, I've designed this podcast just so that we could have this chat.
Thanks. I feel really blessed.
But I think, and that's partly why I wanted to start this podcast, I think that is a kind of inclination, is for women to just go, yep. Onwards and upwards, let's go. Ooh. And not kind of pause and reflect. And I know that primarily that I like this to be funny and upbeat, because I think that it's through laughter that you can kind of reclaim the experience. Ooh. But equally, I think it's very important to share these stories and be allowed to say, you know, it hurt. It was a disappointment. I didn't feel good about it.
Ooh.
And without fear of somebody going, yeah, but does that mean you don't love your baby?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also and you don't want to say this in front of people who, you know, might become pregnant soon. People
True.
Who are pregnant. Men generally don't like it. I'm generalizing massively.
But I know
people,
what you mean.
You know, leave the room firmly or start another conversation about something else. And so that leaves you with a fairly limited pool of people that you feel you can start the conversation with, which is a shame because there's not many other things like that.
And it's a very, very profound moment, unique and unique to everyone. I mean, we have these shared experiences that we can both identify with, but each, you know, what I've discovered is each birth story is unique and profound. And they all deserve to be told, no matter what happens.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you're doing this podcast. It's so wonderful to be able to hear people just talk. I found it, you know, it's tremendously useful. You know, I thought, oh, I was alone in thinking that I wanted, you know, death to claim me. And no, that happens to everyone. But, you know, no one would ever say that because someone would immediately start charming. But look at the baby.
Yeah. I talked to someone the other day who was saying that they felt very underwhelmed by the moment of birth, that they expected to feel euphoric and, oh my God, how wonderful, I'm a mother. And they just felt utterly let down and underwhelmed, which is something that I shared. I just felt so shocked. And again, you know, you're not encouraged to tell those kind of stories because you worry that it'll make you look like a bad mother. But I think it is important to be open about these things.
Yes. And I, you know, it took me a very long time, I think, to feel bonded to my daughter. And so when my husband, you know, was weeping at the beauty of it all, you know, I was quite envious. I thought, well, maybe, you know, if I'd watched me give birth, I too could feel incredibly connected to this tiny child. And yeah, with my son, I remember, you know, I didn't meet him for a few hours because they whisked him off. So I remember having to go upstairs and find him in neonatal intensive care and go, which one is he? Oh, he's that one. Oh, hi. And it's...
Cool. Which one is he? I love it.
Oh, he's not that one. It's that one. You know, like choosing a puppy, except I didn't get to choose it. You know.
So if you could go back to the Marianne pre-childbirth, apart from saying have an elective cesarean, what piece of advice would you give yourself?
What piece of advice would I give myself? I'm having to think really hard about this. I think it's, you've got to talk even when people don't want to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not even during the labour, but afterwards. I came home and I didn't really talk about it for ages. Mm. Or I tried to talk about it and then kind of shut up again because someone started telling me about their holiday. And what that meant was it just really festered. And, you know, things like after I'd had my little boy, I remember coming down from the theatre and, you know, I didn't have a baby with me because he was in intensive care. And somebody said, congratulations. And I thought at the time, well, don't congratulate me, you know, not even holding a baby. But I did tell someone about that quite quickly afterwards. And they went, no, that you're being absurd. It's fine. And I felt so much better. So I wish I'd had that the first time around. I wish I'd just talked and kept talking and made people sit and make faces and listen to me until I'd finish. I think that would have helped a lot. So
it
that,
would,
that
have.
Would be.
I agree with you. And also, I wish you'd really gone for it and showed the anaesthetist your tits. And what I'm going to do with all these pieces of advice is I'm going to go down to the beach at sunrise and I'm going to carve it into the sand, ready for a drone above to come over and take a really beautiful picture. But just before that, my dog's going to run in and dig everything up so it just holes, because I don't really believe in advice on this show. We don't have advice. We just have stories and talking. So thank you, Marianne, for being such a fantastic guest.
Thank you so much.
And allowing us to probe your uterus so profoundly.
Oh, thanks for looking at my flu with me.
Oh, I loved it. It's a lovely view. Flu with a view.
That's the next podcast.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Series 3.
Thank you very much and keep talking.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to One Torn Every Minute. I hope you recover fully from the experience. See you next time.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Heavy Pencil.
An actor of my experience, you just get wrung dry.
A podcast sitcom with Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
I played Edmund Gelder, and he played Fanny Snatch.
The Observer called it
a lovely thing, wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
I'm not having any more of this. I need you to pull me off immediately.
Heavy Pencil from Great Big Owl.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.